Good afternoon, New York, and the rest of our listeners around the globe. My name is June Stoyer, and I'm the host of the Organic View Radio Show. Our podcast is available on iTunes, Zune, and all major podcast providers. So if you can't catch the show live, you can download it or simply use our free podcast player, which is available on our website at www.theorganicview.com. If you'd like to connect with us, please post a question on our wall on Facebook or send me a tweet at June Stoyer on Twitter. If you'd like to be on the show or would like to find out about sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at questions@theorganicview.com. Today's show is sponsored by Austria's Finest Naturally Authentic Pumpkin Seeds and Pumpkin Seed Oil from the Steiermark, available at organicuniverse.com. Listeners of The Organic View can receive $1 off their purchase by using the coupon code ORGVIEW. That's ORGVIEW. Also, don't forget to check out our contest section on our website to submit your information for our free monthly giveaways. For more information, please visit our website at www.theorganicview.com/contests. On today's show, Tom and I are going to talk about a recent development in the state of Maryland about the use of pesticides in Montgomery County. Joining us will be Council President George Leventhal. He's going to talk about the history behind this decision, as well as how this will impact residents. Later on in the show, we're going to talk about TPP, as well as an important decision by Ball Flora Plant to eliminate the use of neonicotinoids on its offshore cutting farms. But first, I'd like to welcome to the show Tom Theobald.
Good afternoon, June, from sunny Colorado.
Joining us today is Council President George Leventhal, who's going to talk about an amended bill, 5214, which approves restrictions on the use of lawn pesticides. So I'd like to welcome to the show Councilmember Leventhal. Good afternoon, sir, and welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
Sir, could you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and some of the issues that you focus on?
I've been a member of the Montgomery County Council since 2002, and during that time, I've chaired the Health and Human Services Committee. I also co-chair a group called the Healthy Montgomery Steering Committee, which is currently putting the Community Health Needs Assessment together. So I would say I'm mostly involved in public health policy and social services as well. And so in terms of health, community residents have been approaching me for many years to express concern about pesticides. And honestly, I feel I've gotten a lot done in 12 years, but I wasn't entirely ready to focus on the issue initially when it was raised with me. And it took time on my side and persistence on their side. And then beginning, I think, in 2013, I started having serious discussions with a lot of people on the topic, and these ideas sort of germinated. I was working with other council members as well, and we ended up with Bill 5214, which we introduced in November of 2014. So we haven't rushed into this at all. The council's been discussing this publicly discussing it for at least a year and a half.
Could you take a moment and share some of the history behind this decision?
Well, again, the history is that community residents have expressed concern over many years about exposure to chemicals that they believe have adverse health effects, a wide range of adverse health effects. And in general, the application of these pesticides has been at the convenience of the property owners without regard really to complaints. So this bill is in response to complaints. And what the bill will do is that beginning January 1st of 2018, Montgomery County homeowners will no longer be permitted to use toxic lawn chemicals, which will be a list of registered pesticides on their lawns. And then the Parks Department must also come up with a plan to go pesticide-free by 2020. There's a lot more to the bill than that, but those, I think, are the two most significant.
Can you also take a moment and talk about the pilot program?
Well, the Parks Department will test five sites and will go pesticide-free beginning right away, and then it'll take a couple of years to assess the condition of the turf after solely applying organic and natural treatments.
Our focus has been the neonicotinoids, and I'm reassured to see that you have specifically addressed those. My question is, this is really an important step because it refers to private land, and I'm wondering just how restrictive it's going to be for private land. I understand that it's prohibited on lawns, but not in gardens.
And right, it only affects the grassy areas. Right, that's correct. No, I mean, look, there's a lot of exemptions and exceptions here. I mean, what we came down to was that the strongest argument was that the application of these chemicals to grassy areas is unnecessary. And so that's what we're really dealing with in this bill. This bill does not prevent the application of pesticides for a variety of purposes on gardens or trees or to control invasive species or noxious weeds. There's a whole list of things for which pesticides would still be permitted. And that, you know, what I said initially was that I wanted the strongest possible bill that would command the largest number of votes from council members. And so that's what we produced today. As with many other environmental initiatives, you know, clean water initiatives and recycling and many other things, renewable energy, you know, you sort of keep returning to the topic over time as you learn more and understand it better. And I don't think this conversation will stop with the passage of 5214, but we also need to proceed step by step and take our time and see what issues we confront in the enforcement of this new law.
One of the things that we've seen in other parts of the country with the local efforts is preemption, where the decision is raised either to the state or the federal level. And in fact, we're seeing it with the label question on genetically modified crops right now. Have you seen that in your area? Are you getting any pushback from this?
Well, Maryland is one of seven states that are not expressly preempted in state law from enacting its there, you know, where counties are not expressly preempted. Now, there was a letter from an assistant attorney general saying that we may be preempted, and the attorney general didn't personally sign off on that letter, but the opponents of this bill cited that letter, including the Washington Post editorial page. So the question of preemption has been raised, and we're not encouraging litigation. We'd rather not have litigation, but if it occurs, then the question of preemption may be addressed in court.
These prohibitions apply to the professional lawn care services as well?
They absolutely do, yes.
Sir, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show today.
Thank you.
And for all your efforts. And I sincerely hope that this inspires other counties across the nation to follow your fine example.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the conversation.
Yes, thank you for taking the time to talk to us.
You're welcome. It was a pleasure. Have a good afternoon.
Thank you. Tom, everywhere you go, people are talking about this new, people are talking about TPP. And it's baffling because the public is kind of waiting to find out what is involved because they haven't released all the information to the public, which I think is kind of odd. And just recently, Hillary Clinton pulled her support for this. From what you understand, what are your thoughts on TPP?
I'm not intimately familiar with it, but I have heard concerns expressed by beekeepers and others about some of the things that it will accomplish. And the major concern is that what this does is this extends corporate power globally. In other words, the United States, we're focusing on pesticides primarily, and if a pesticide is approved for use in the United States and a company wants to use it in some other country and that country says no, then that issue goes before a corporate court, and the decision that could be made and likely will be is that that country is depriving that company of unrealized profits and can be fined substantial amounts of money. What it does and what the concern of the people I've talked to are is that it overrides the sovereignty of independent nations. We will have no longer nation states. The corporations will be in the driver's seat. And I think that from my understanding of these pacts, there are two. One is the Trans-Pacific Trade Pact, which is in the news right now. The other is, on the other side, the Transatlantic Trade Pact, which would accomplish the same thing. But effectively, these are efforts to globalize corporate power. That's my impression.
Well, if you think about countries that are importing and exporting, I think this is also going to pose a huge problem for beekeepers, especially since, as it is, we see honey that's on the market that's a blend of honey that's produced in America combined with honey that's produced in Canada, South America, what have you. It's creating a further problem for the market.
I was talking with a commercial beekeeper just this morning about this issue, and his concern, first of all, you need to understand that the honey production in this country has reached the lowest level ever since records first began to be kept in the 1930s. But the American honey producers still do have a portion of that market. And there was a flap a couple of years ago about honey from China being contaminated with a chemical called chloramphenicol. And according to the beekeeper I was speaking with this morning, China has now found a way to remove the chloramphenicol from their honey, and they're transshipping it through, in the case of the discussion we were having this morning, Canada, and it's coming into the United States. Now, one of the effects of these international trade agreements may be to remove whatever tariffs or restrictions we've had in America to stem the tide of this foreign honey. So it's not necessarily a good step for everybody.
Well, once they release all of the information, I'm sure there's going to be quite a number of discussions that are more in depth as far as the finer points. But for now, unfortunately, we're basically at the mercy of those who are in a position to do the right thing, and all we could do is hope that they serve the people instead of their own special interests.
These international trade pacts are a very curious package because, again, I don't understand all the details, but what I do understand is they have been done in secret without the involvement of governments. And now this secret package is being presented to the United States government, and they have the option of either approving or disapproving. These corporate influences, I was listening to a radio program this morning where the speaker referred to this as corporate megalomania, and I think that these trade pacts, whatever advantages they may achieve, are part of this megalomania. This is an effort for global control.
It's an effort to definitely allow the corporations to have even more power and more ability over what they feel we should be entitled to or not. And the bottom line is, who are the corporations going to answer to? It's horrible that at this point, they seem to be so in bed with government. And now this is a global issue. And unfortunately, we don't have the full document so that we can go over everything with a fine-tooth comb. So unfortunately, it remains to be seen. So that's something that we're going to have to revisit. Also in the news is a growing concern by New Zealand beekeepers that their version of the EPA is worse than what we have here in America. I don't know, Tom. New Zealand is a very big agricultural nation. And 2 years ago, we had the largest exporter of honey on the show, John Hartnell. You know, really nice guy, has a very successful business, but he wasn't even remotely concerned about what's going on with industry because he said that they have a very healthy relationship. And now we're hearing stories about beekeepers that are having major concerns about what's going on as their businesses are suffering.
New Zealand beekeepers and beekeepers around the world have gotten a sales pitch about how the neonicotinoids are safe for bees and so beneficial. And now, after a few years of experience, the New Zealand beekeepers are recognizing that they're suffering very severe damages. We're seeing the same thing in Australia. For many years, the chemical companies were citing Australia as a success story, and they made note of the fact that Australia does not have varroa mites. Varroa mites is one of those things that they were trying to pin these losses on. And what we're seeing is that the Australian beekeepers are now beginning to speak out for the same reasons, that they're beginning to suffer the consequences of these systemic pesticides. So Mr. Hartnell, apparently in the most recent report, still thinks it's not a problem, but the beekeepers apparently do not agree with him.
Well, it seems as though that's a very common opinion to have, especially when you're losing your business. It's just a mess. And I truly believe that once people are experiencing drastic food shortages, at that point, things will begin to change. But unfortunately, industry just keeps pounding away that everything's fine with the pollinators. And we know fully well, especially you, Tom, since you work so closely with the professional beekeeping community, that things are not as they have been reported by mainstream media.
No, the corporate influences have a great deal of control over the media because they own much of the media. And the story that we're hearing in the major media outlets is that everything is going along pretty well, that the number of colonies is increasing, and that's just not the case. And we're being failed by our regulators. We're being failed by our government. In fact, we have no government. You know, you mentioned earlier that the government was in bed with the corporations. I think it's much worse than that. It appears from their activities that we have no government. They just carry out the bidding of these corporate influences that shovel money in their direction in large amounts. I would be happy to take on any of the representatives of the congressmen who believe otherwise. We'd be happy to talk with them on this program.
On a more positive note, Ball Flora Plant has announced its offshore cutting farms did not use neonicotinoid-based chemicals during its spring crop production last shipping season, and they will continue to be neonicotinoid-free this year. So I think that this is a very important message, especially to this industry, that they're taking this position, because like so many other companies that are trying to do their part to provide safe foraging for the bees and other pollinators, this is a huge step.
Yes, this is a very significant step. This is a large supplier, and it says several things. The first is a recognition that there are some serious problems that may be inherent with the use of these neonicotinoid pesticides. It's also a statement, I think, on the part of a very large supplier, that the demand is out there for plants that have not been treated. And that's a change of attitude. We haven't seen anything quite like this yet. So I think it's a very important step in the right direction.
I completely agree. In the article in greenhousegrow.com, there's a quote by Ball Flora Plant's production director, Art DeLiu. And he said, "Our farms moved towards eliminating neonicotinoid chemicals a few seasons ago before it became more mainstream issue. Our reasons were threefold: build up our pest resistance, overall chemical expense, and to reduce any toxic effects to the environment." And he further goes on to say, "It's all about reliability. By starting clean with clean and clear buildup material, we are able to adhere to a zero tolerance rule. Any insect sightings are dealt with immediately to remove old leaves and possible eggs from the stock without the need for neonicotinoid chemicals," end quote. And I think that that sends such a positive message. So, you know, bravo, Ball Flora Plant. Way to go. And I sincerely hope that we see more companies follow their example.
Well, other companies in this industry should be paying attention, because what they're saying is that they believe that there's a market for their products that are free of neonicotinoids. They might not be so eager to take this step if they were going to impact their sales, but I think it's a statement that they believe that the demand is out there for uncontaminated plants, and other companies that are in this industry should be paying close attention to this.
Well, considering how large of an operation they have, obviously if they were looking to just go for profit and not the longevity, they would have continued as pretty much a lot of other companies are. But, you know, I once again, very positive step in the right direction. Tom, thanks for taking the time to join me today and for also talking to the council member
Well, thank you, June. You know, almost every week there are interesting new developments, so this is an unfolding story that continues to unfold.
It certainly does. And folks, please tune in next week as Tom and I continue our discussion about the impact of neonicotinoids on the environment. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been June Stoyer with the Organic View Radio Show. Have a great afternoon, everyone.